Okay. When we want to do some rituals and pujas, or when the Lama gives us instructions, or the Lama gives us certain practices to do, if we do it, some of us have tremendous effect. Some of us have immediate effect. Some of us keep doing it and don't have effect. The effect comes from one's confidence in one's Lama. A, confidence in the three jewels. B, C, holding one's refuge vows very clearly. The reason for that is it collects the merit for whatever you want to accomplish to be accomplished. If one doesn't have confidence in a Lama or doesn't follow the instructions of a Lama, always flip back and forth or selective, I want to do this, I don't want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this, then the rituals also come out like that. This is what's taught in the tantras, this is what's taught by my guru. Especially in health cases, such as the medicine Buddha, it says, the first thing it says in divination is, all gurus say this, the first thing is, if you're going to engage in medicine Buddha practice, especially in medicine Buddha rituals, you must have full confidence in one's Lama, especially in the medicine Buddha tantras. So therefore, rituals and certain things can be done due to one's confidence in one's Lama, in the three jewels, and holding one's refuge vows. Some say, I don't have refuge vows. No, but whether we have refuge vows or not, they're not something weird or strange. If we follow them as we had them until we receive them, the effect will be very good also. All right? And rituals, how long and short they are, is dependent on the student. Some students' karma is very strong, so long, extensive rituals needed. Some is very short. Sometimes obstacles can be destroyed when one just thinks about one's Lama and has confidence and faith. The obstacles will be destroyed. This was told to me by many of my Lamas. Okay? Now, I had an idea, and this is just to put in your minds, plant some seeds for the future. When maybe I do or not is dependent on the people, depending on the situation. I often say I'm going to teach this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Whether I do or not is not dependent on me. It's dependent on the people receiving it. So there's a special form of Avalokiteshvara. Avalokiteshvara is a Sanskrit name for, it means one who sees everyone's suffering. And this form of Avalokiteshvara is called Nyesun Kundro. And he sits in a royal ease, holding a mala like this. And his hand here is in the back. This one holds a stem of a lotus, and the lotus opens up next to his ears. And he sits here with his hand holding the lotus like this, and this one mala holding like that. And he's in the pose of royal ease, one face and two arms. Very soft, very gentle, very beautiful. Shawagita, wearing a deer skin here, symbolic, all right? And he's in a pose of royal ease like this, very relaxed. Then on his left, on this left side, your left side, his right side, is the Mother Goddess Green Tara. Then on his left side, or your right, is the Goddess Fierce Egazati, black form and dark, with her breasts hanging down and holding a Vajragini's chopper knife, and here holding a Kapala or a skull cup, and in full fierce ferocity looking at you with fangs and three eyes, like this. So this comes as a triad. We call that Chenezi Nyesun Kunju Chokor Sum. Chokor means, Cho means the main one. Kor Sum is two, three. The three, they come together. So this form of Nyesun Kundro, this form of Avalokiteshvara is called Nyesun Kundro. And I received this initiation from His Holiness Kepche Song Rinpoche already. This initiation is very, very beneficial because it gives you three in one, which means the mantra for Tara is a little bit different than normal. And you have Ekazati's mantra, you have Tara's mantra, and you have Avalokiteshvara's mantra. And you focus on Avalokiteshvara along with the two other mantras, and the sadhana is quite short and quite easy. And what happens is this, if you have some special wishes you wish to accomplish, you can evoke about Tara more. If you have very fierce obstacles and difficulties, you can evoke on Ekazati. Okay, but mainly it's Avalokiteshvara. One time in Seremban, I was staying there for about a month giving Dharma teachings. So I was invited to a Chinese Dharma center there. And the head was a nun, and their origins are from Taiwan. So the nun was staying in the house in the Dharma Center, and she was staying upstairs. And every single day, at night when she tried to sleep, somebody or something opened the door and would touch her. All the time. It wouldn't molest her, but it would touch her. And it went on every single night, nonstop. And it went on for months and months. And when you talk to her, she came to see me through my friend. When you talk to her, you don't get a feeling that she's trying to show you or tell you or want to feel anything extraordinary, because she was very shy, she was very embarrassed, and she didn't want to talk about it. And you can see she's very harassed. She had very big dark eye circles under her eyes, and it's the kind of eye circles, it's not a natural eye circles that some people have. Hers is, you can see she hasn't slept, and her eyes were glassy, meaning she looked very tired. And you can see her overall countenance was very, very tired and exhausted, and she had a very punishing schedule to carry on Dharma activities during the day, meaning she pushed herself. And at night, she just couldn't sleep. She dared not tell any of this to her students and disciples, because it's a big center, and she only told to a few close ones. And she had gone to see a few people, and the problem kept persisting and persisting and persisting. So she came to me as to see what can be done. So the divination came out that she should practice Ekazati. That's her affinity. So I had no choice. I had to have my people prepare an initiation just for her, because she's a Dharma leader, and she does a lot of Dharma work. So her healing is very, very necessary. So we had hours and hours of tormas done and rituals done. Then I had to do self-initiation, which took many hours, and then give her initiation, which took another 5-6 hours. So she received this initiation. She went back, and I was told a couple of weeks later, she has no more problems. And that's been about 5-6 years. She's in KL now. Until now, no more problems. None at all. So this initiation is quite powerful and quite excellent, and it involves taking the bodhisattva vows. Prior to taking bodhisattva vows, one should take the refuge vows from one's guru. One has to take the refuge vows. Without the refuge vows, the bodhisattva vows cannot be given, because it's one of the non-creative tantras. It doesn't require tantric commitments or attending tok or doing tok, this initiation. And the focus is on Avalokiteshvara. So the specialty of this practice is this. Avalokiteshvara Nye Sung Kunjo. Nye Sung means the three lower realms. Kunjo means one who takes you from the three lower realms. So if one receives this initiation, does hold the commitments to, number three, recites Om Mani Padme Hum one round every single day on the mala without break, then it is assured, according to Khyentse Sarangji, that when one passes away, no matter how bad one's karma has been, one will not take rebirth in the three lower realms at all. So even in this life, you have done many negative actions, many, many negative actions, schismatic actions, that when you die, you're supposed to take rebirth in the three lower realms. By the power of this tantra, by the power of this practice, you will not take rebirth in the three lower realms. You will not receive signs of it. Even beforehand, you won't receive of it in dreams. You're even going to go to the three lower realms. None at all. So what happens is you take rebirth again in a higher realm, such as human or gods or demigods, but preferably human, and you'll be able to meet a teacher. You'll be able to meet someone who can teach you how to purify your karma, how to do your practice, and go from there. It's like someone who's supposed to go to jail, and they really, really regret. Really regret. And they've been exempted by a mayor or a minister and a special dispensation, and they don't have to go to jail. They do community work. And they, in fact, instead of doing community work, they maybe even open up something to help the poor, like soup kitchens. And they go beyond what they're supposed to do. And because they regret so much, they repay society back for what they have done. It's likened to something like that. So therefore, I was thinking to myself that we have elder members in our center, perhaps above 60. And for elder members to do a lot of prostrations and mandala offerings and water offerings, it might be difficult, not because they're lazy, but because physically, sometimes unable to. So I thought in the future, I will check the time and place. I'm thinking about conferring this initiation to elder people, just for them, so that they can engage in this practice, and they can engage in this meditation, and they can engage in this retreat. Why? We need to take care of all types of people that come to our center. And for elder people, with the deepest respect to all of them, if they do this practice very well, it encompasses all the practices. It encompasses. So what happens is it'll be very effective for them. And when they pass away, they will be rest assured that they will take rebirth in a good place. A. B. I will be very happy that I have done my duty for all the help and services they have done. Death is an imminent part of life, nothing to avoid, nothing to not talk about. It's something to talk about. The usual scheme of life is older people pass away first, younger later. That's the usual scheme, but it doesn't always work out that way. In any case, I was thinking that would be a very good practice. And some of us have, maybe some of us, our yidams is already, example like Tara or Zambala or whatever, doesn't matter. One round of Om Mani Padme Hum a day is very easy. That's one. Number two, doing a retreat of Avalokiteshvara is beautiful. It's pleasant, it's beautiful, it's easy, it's simple. To receive this initiation, I'm going to make some requirements for the person, and I'll let you guys know in the future when I feel that everybody's ready. And also cooperation from the people who wish to receive the initiation. Receive the initiation is not, oh, there's initiation, I run to it. It's how you act the many months before the initiation, the many years. So if many years you've been doubting your Lama, if many months you've been doubting your Lama, you doubt, when the Lama gives instruction, no, you fight, then it's no use, you get the initiation. Why? You'll definitely break your vows. Why would you break your vows? If the Lama gives you simple instructions and you find it difficult to carry out and you fight and you cry, you get angry and you shout, why? If he gives you refuge vows, you definitely cannot hold it. Definitely cannot hold it. What instructions the Lama might give you is just for one day or 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks, just something small. That one cannot carry out how to carry out holding bodhisattva vows your whole life. So to receive this, one has to be very cooperative with the Lama, and I'll tell you why. In my case, I am very stingy on giving initiations. Very stingy. And the older students know why. I'm very careful and very stingy. I do not commit to a student. Students run around thinking, it's my choice when I become Rinpoche student or take refuge or whatever. No, it's not your choice. It's my choice. It's my choice. Why is it my choice? I have something to offer you. You have nothing to offer me. Simple as that. So therefore, it is my choice when I accept you or when I take you. And when I do, I will take care of you. I will send you messages. I will guide you. I will send you things to read. I will engage you in practices. I will engage you in practices. I will do divinations for you from time to time to protect you. I will watch you until I am dead. Whether there's 1,000 of you, or one of you, or 100 of you, my awareness for students will never wane. I will forget certain things, but not students, not people's spirituality. So if I accept you as my student, if I accept you as a student, my student means someone who kowtows to me? No. Student means someone who has confidence, and I can pour the teachings into their mind and help them. That's to me what a student is. So someone like that, I will take care of them. I will take care. I will not let them go. They can let me go, but I will not let them go. Why? My commitment in life is Dharma, nothing else. Nothing else. So therefore, some people say, oh, can I take refuge? Or some people say, can I be a student? I say, yeah, okay, no problem. Doesn't mean I've accepted them. Let me make it very clear. I have everything to offer you. Everything. As simple as that. So if you wish to receive it, I need compliance. Compliance. To be a slave? No. Toward the practices. Compliance. Very important. Okay? So if we're going to study in school, we need to comply to our teacher. If we're going to learn a trade, woodworking, carpentry, we need to comply to a teacher. Compliance is nothing new in Buddhism. It is a human factor in learning. So if I have people that always says no or cannot or make up conditions or make it very difficult, it doesn't disappoint me or make me upset. I just think, oh, It's going to be very hard to give them information, very hard to pass the Dharma to them, very hard to do things for them. People who are very difficult for Dharma always have difficulty in their lives. Why do they have difficulty in lives? Because difficulty is difficulty. They create it. Simple as that. They create it. Okay? So therefore, I would like to offer older members of our center, this initiation in the future. Future can be 1 year, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months. Don't know. It depends on all of you. Depend on what? I'll just watch and feel. I'm a spontaneous type. When I feel it's ready, I just say, ready. I don't like to plan. Because why? Can your mind plan when you will transform? Can your mind plan when you will comply? Can your mind plan? If you can't plan, I can't plan. I'm not like other lamas and other centers with deep respect. I just show up once a year, twice a year, and do big ceremonies, big initiations, and disappear, and you never hear from me in between. And also, I don't explain the vows, I don't explain the practices, but it's very grand, rent big halls, big tankas, big thrones, big music, big advertisement, and newspapers and flyers, and His Eminence, His Holiness, His this, His everything, la. No, I don't do things like that. Why? I'm not here as a business. I'm not here to raise business for my center. I'm not here to make business from my center, for my center, or from my center. That's why I am very stingy. That's why I don't let my students set up big halls and big advertisements all over. I can. Don't you think if I'm advertising, people come see me, they'd like me? Of course they'd like me. Why do they like me? Let me not show off again. Let you guys can figure it out. But I don't do that. I don't advertise. I don't put in the papers. I don't like all that. Why? Oh, Rinpoche is giving this teaching, giving this initiation, at this date, blah, at this hall, blah, blah, blah. I don't like all that. Why? Many reasons. So, I don't do things like that, and I don't feel comfortable. Maybe in the future it will be different when people's minds are different, but not now. Why? As I said, the center is not for business and to make business. Definitely not. And people who want to come, they come. People who don't want to come, I will do my best to help them to come and to assist them. If they still don't have the merits to come, there's nothing I can do. But I will definitely try. So therefore, when I accept a student, I will take care of them. I will not let them go. As simple as that. I combine Dharma with human care. So, some people receive rituals or practices or meditations from me, and they do it. They get some effects. Some don't get any effect. Why is it some people get effect and some people don't get effect? Either the ritual is wrong or the person receiving it is not following the requirements. So we should think. We should think. Either the lama's wrong, the tradition is wrong, or the person receiving it is not following all the requirements. So therefore, they don't get the full results. Have to think like that very carefully. Okay? Okay, today is a very important session. Lama dang gong jin jin ma yan la cha se lo gang ge lu jin jin ni jin 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 nam da la se we ji ni ju gin ji sin ji jin ni ge to ba le ba sin ka da si be so na ma ri me de ni ge ji ji be ju zu gu la bu ji sa ji ye la ju ji yan da a yang da so ju ju ji de ni me ni lo li ji ju zu ju se ji ma ri me se de ge ni ju gu ji ni ju se de ji nam Omana bazana diyo mana 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 bazana diy Umarım bazından I bow down to you, Manjushri, who are the brilliance of wisdom or compassionate one. Illuminate the darkness and close my mind, enlighten my intelligence and wisdom so that I may gain insight into the Buddha's words and texts explain them. I bow down to you, Manjushri, with the brilliance of wisdom or compassionate one. Illuminate the darkness and close my mind. Enlighten my intelligence and wisdom so that I may gain insight into the Buddha's words and the texts that explain them. I bow down to you, Manjushri, with the brilliance of wisdom or compassionate one. Illuminate the darkness and close my mind. Enlighten my intelligence and wisdom so that I may gain insight into the Buddha's words and the texts that explain them. And as usual, if people are going on a big journey, if people are starting a new business, if people are starting on a new enterprise, or it's an auspicious day, it's their birthday, or anything of that nature, anything special that's going to go on, and maybe their lama's not around, or some Dharma student's not around, and they don't know what to do, then something very auspicious to start with always, before teachings, before special events or anything, is do Lama Tsongkhapa's Guru Yoga. Very, very auspicious. To recite Lama Tsongkhapa's Guru Yoga, to recite Mitsama and finish it. I learned this from the great Mahasiddha, Geshe Thurim Gyaltsen in America, who is in his, early 80s now. So it's not something I just thought up arbitrarily. This is something from my gurus. And I used to ask Geshe-la, sometimes we go for big Buddhist gatherings. Sometimes in Los Angeles, there's interfaith and inter-Buddhist gathering. It means Buddhists of all countries and all sects and all backgrounds. They fill up a big hall, and there are monks and teachers from all tradition and nuns. I mean, Vietnamese, Chinese, you name it. The place is just packed. One time I went to one of these gatherings with Geshe Thurim Gyaltsen. He went with three or four of us. And each tradition, before they started their meeting, would do a special chant. So each country had a very special and beautiful chant, and they did their chanting. And some were quite ritualized. Some had bells, and some did it, with bells, staccato. Some people did all types of rituals. And then it came to the Tibetan tradition. Geshe-la represented the whole Tibetan tradition. I thought, okay, now it's time to show off. Because I looked at the other ones and Tibetans are known for long rituals. And I said, okay, it's our time to show off. And I thought, I wonder what Geshe-la is going to do, maybe some Yamataka or something, some big mudra and chant and impress them and with his memory, with his mudras, with his recitation, with his great chanting. I thought, what is he going to do, because this is our time. I really thought that. I was 17, 18, time to show off. So I sat there like this. The Vietnamese impressed me a little. The Chinese one, not bad. Ding, ding, ding. I thought, never mind, we got a better bella. And so I waited. And Geshe-la folded his hands in front of everybody, and recited Lama Tsongkhapa's Guru Yoga with no type of melodious chanting, just straightforward. And then when he got to Mictama, he chanted Mictama very slowly. And when he finished the dissolution, and it took him about 10 minutes. I had to memorize, so I recited with him. The other two disciples didn't memorize it. So they sat there like, oh rats, we didn't bring our prayer book. So I was like, and I was very proud and I was saying, but my voice cracked a little because one part I got mixed up and I went, I don't know. And I continued. And I remember the whole hall, there was hundreds of people staring at Geshe-la, of course, because he's a master, and looking at me more because they, who's the twerp? There's this skinny little kid with dyed red hair sitting there chanting away like that. And I was looking very holy because I had my eyes closed. And chanted very slow. I'm not kidding. This really happened with my ego. And so they stared at me. I remember seeing some nuns and some monks, even from the stage. They were like, because it was just me and Geshe-la's voice in the whole place. But I controlled my voice, so I don't overpower it. I mean, my ego's not that big to look better than my guru, but I wouldn't anyway. So anyways, I controlled myself, and I remember everybody staring at me like, and I remember somebody asking, who's that kid? Why does he know chanting? Who's that kid? And I remember hearing that as a whisper, or somebody asked, or one of the nuns said, I can't remember. But when I heard that, My ego was fertilized. It grew like weeds. And so when we finished, we went back to the car, and I was acting all humble and nice because I had to memorize, you know, because now I'm holy. So you know how you act when you're all holy. You instead of being more humble, you're like, you show a humbleness, but it's a fake type to invite more praise. And that's what I did. It's a big mind game. And so when we went out to the car, I went to Geshe-la. I said, Geshe-la, all these people did all these fancy smancy chantings and all that stuff. Why did you do just Lama Tsongkhapa's Guru Yoga? He looked at me and said, just? He says, the 84,000 teachings of Lord Buddha is planted in the Guru Yoga Lama Tsongkhapa, all 84,000. If you are a master, you will be able to explain all of Buddha's teachings completely from each line of Lama Tsongkhapa's praise. All 84,000 included. He says, to recite that simple and from the heart and purely will plant seeds in everybody's mind of enlightenment, will bless everybody in the congregation. And he says, what practice is more superior than that? And I thought, oh my God. I shut up real fast. I thought, a Dharma master, a PhD in Buddhist studies, a Geshe Haram of Ganden Shatse, a grand master already in his 70s, who knows the rituals of Tantra, Sutra, and Tantra inside out, who has everything memorized, who can stand in front of the Dalai Lama and from memory make long life offerings. Long verses to recite. I saw, because I went to teachings with Geshe-la, recite in front of his holiness the Dalai Lama, and his voice never cracked because he has no ego. For such a grand master, with hundreds of people, even grand masters of our monastery, when they see him, they prostrate to him, says to me that the most complete practice is Lama Tsongkhapa. And he wasn't doing that for show, because why? At our center, every week, Sunday, we have Dharma teachings, every week. And Geshe-la was very unhappy if you missed Dharma teachings on Sunday. If you missed Sundays, he was very, very unhappy, because he says, once a week, cannot take a few hours out for Dharma, where's your commitment? Once a week, you cannot reschedule yourself just for Dharma. Once a week, he was very unhappy. And before Dharma teachings, he would do Lama Tsongkhapa's Guru Yoga. Mandala offering, the Heart Sutra, short form, and then he would start the teachings. And then right after that, he would make us do a short few-minute meditation on motivation, and then he would start the teachings. Always. Always. So when I heard that, it made a huge impact on my life. So I followed this tradition of reciting Lama Tsongkhapa's Guru Yoga before anything, for anything, following the traditions of the great Geshe, Tsurim Gyaltsen of Ganden Shatse, who resides in Los Angeles, who runs a center in Los Angeles, who has many books out already. You can look it up. Geshe Tsurim Gyaltsen, very renowned master of Ganden Shatse. Tsurim Gyaltsen, we should have his book in KP, I saw it. T-S-U-L-T-R-I-M, Tsultim. Gyaltsen, G-Y-E-L-T-S-E-N. And Geshe Tsurim Gyaltsen has sponsored the Dalai Lama's visit to the United States many, many times. The last visit cost, what was it? Does somebody remember? Huh? $600,000 US, but they raised $900,000, and they invited His Holiness Dalai Lama, the entourage, and government members all the way to Los Angeles to give a Tara initiation and teachings. This was just this year. And who attended was Lindsay Wagner, the Bionic Woman, so with us other stars. So one of my friends there met up with Lindsay Wagner and said, you know what, Temrim, she's a great fan of yours. He's in Malaysia. You want to visit? She says, oh, my new video is out. Let him know. I was like, oh. Just imagine the Bionic Woman comes here and gets a Bionic Dharma talk. Wouldn't that be great? Okay, so before we start, I would advise everybody to memorize Lama Tsongkhapa's Guru Yoga. Memorize it in English or Tibetan and recite it. The minute you get up in the morning, before you start making calls, before you scream for tea, before you start, you know, thinking, oh, I don't want to meet this person or that person, or thinking about work, or your mama telling you to come downstairs because we have a lot of mama's boys here. Before any of that, just the minute you wake up, recite Lama Tsongkhapa's Guru Yoga. Start your day with the Buddha. It's very powerful. All right? My Lord Guru comes from Tushita Heaven, emanating forth from Lama Maitreya's heart. And he's assembled before me with his two spiritual sons, Kedru Rinchi and Getsa Rinchi. Please come to this place at this time. My beautiful guru smiles with great delight. He sits on a lion throne with a lotus and a moon seat. Before me, I request you to remain for 100 aeons in order to spread the teachings and be a supreme merit field for my mind's faith. Shiji chungun chawa lu du du kyanzan dawa jiji lesen shun chabe bajan habe sebe gu dun dun chambin dun dun la chao tseo. Your mind has the intellect to comprehend all to the full extent to be known. You are omniscient. Your speech with its excellent explanation becomes the ear ornament of those of good fortune. Your body is radiant and handsome with glory and renown. I prostrate to you, Lama Tsongkhapa, who to behold, to hear, or to recall is worthwhile. Pleasing water offerings, various flowers, fragrant incense, light and scented water, an ocean of actual and visualized cloud offerings, I present to you, O great merit field, Lama Tsongkhapa. Whatever negativities I committed with my body, my speech, and my mind that I've accumulated from many lifetimes, and any of my transgressions of my vows, I confess to you, Lama Tsongkhapa, who is a fully enlightened being. Please forgive me, and may I purify my negative vows. From my heart, great Lama Tsongkhapa, by reading your biographies and listening to your deeds, I rejoice in your waves and oceans of great merits and great actions that you have committed in your life. You strove to learn and practice in this degenerate age and made life meaningful by abandoning the 8 worldly dharmas. Great Lama, without you, dharma is not possible, attainments is not possible. From the void of the Dharmakaya sky-like wisdom, please rain down a vast Dharma and train me according to my needs. I dedicate whatever virtues I have collected for the benefit of the teachings to grow and all sentient beings to receive it, and in particular, the essential teachings of the Venerable Losan Trapa Lama Tsongkhapa to shine forever.
Sanji, Puji Juji, Mezon Trang, Rira Lizin, Nende Gemadi, Sanji Zido, Meze, Owayi, Rokon Nanda Zin, Lanchu, Barajo.
By directing to the fields of the Buddhas, this mandala, a base resplendent with flowers, saffron, water, incense, adorned with Mount Meru, the four continents, the sun, and the moon, may all sentient beings be led to these holy fields of Buddha.
Oma idama guru randa mandala ka niraya taya mi mi me te ve te jin chene zi dwe me ke me oma jama ya de wo ma yin jom zin sa ma da ka jin ge be su jin zong ba lo zang cha be sha la zong wan de mi me te ve te jin chene zi dwe me ke me oma jama ya de wo ma yin jom zin sa ma da ka jin ge be su jin zong ba lo zang cha be sha la zong wan de mi me te ve te jin chene zi dwe me ke me oma jama ya de wo ma yin jom zin sa ma da ka jin ge be su jin zong ba lo zang cha be sha la zong wan de
Lama Tsongkhapa's two sons dissolve into Lama Tsongkhapa, they become one. Lama Tsongkhapa's throne, made of light, his lotus, the sun and moon disc all dissolve into Lama Tsongkhapa. And Lama Tsongkhapa, for the benefit of ourselves and our perceptions, shrinks to a size of a thumb, and turns around and faces the direction we face and lands on top of our head very gently with a smile. By reciting the second line of invitation, Lama Tsongkhapa's beautiful body dissolves into our central channel and it goes down to our heart center. And it melts with our mind. Our mind and Lama Tsongkhapa's mind become one. The light is very bright and strong, but not heavy. Do not visualize it as heavy. And that is Lama Tsongkhapa's essence. From the light is the cloud-like seat that he was sitting
Set
on
it,
in the form thread. Of like a yarn, a string that connects from our central channel through our leaves the top of our forehead and goes straight up to Maitreya's heart, or Tushita heaven, Ganden heaven. Wherever we go, that string is never disconnected ever.
Benden sawara monji dagini mebidan jama kaji jemo gorin jinze janji ni mo badu tan bara sho
lama tsongkhapa and us become one and stays with us until the end of time. In this life and future lives, we will meet lama tsongkhapa again and again and again, and the teachers of this tradition and teachers of lama tsongkhapa to receive dharma teachings. And then we think that our mind is clear and bright, we're able to continue and do our work during the day. And that's Lama Tsongkhapa's Guru Yoga in short form. Very easy and very nice to do. I think I won't do any other prayers, because that one will be more than enough and sufficient enough for all of us. Okay. Now, I am very happy that all of you can make it. I'm very happy that you have taken Dharma as a priority and made the time to make it. That reflects your mind, it reflects your level, it reflects who you are. And by making the time to make it for Dharma and listening to Dharma while we have the chance, then it shows our commitment toward gaining higher spiritual realizations. If we cannot even make a commitment to make it to Dharma, how can we achieve higher spiritual attainments? Without instructions, how do we become attained? So it's very important. So during this Dharma talk, today and tomorrow's, please do not be like the three pots. One pot is up with holes. So whatever goes in, it just comes out. Do not be like the second pot, where the pot is up, but is dirty and contaminated. So whatever teachings go in, it's unusable because it becomes contaminated. And do not be like the third pot, where the pot is facing down, closed-mindedness, so that whatever teachings come, it just dribbles away to the side. So be free of the three types of faulty pots when listening to the Dharma teachings. Have good motivation, stay alert, stay awake, and focus. Why? You are in a Dharma teaching. You are listening to your teacher repeat what Lord Buddha has taught 2,500 years ago. Your teacher is not motivated by money. Your teacher is not motivated by fame or reputation. And definitely not to receive anything from the students. Your teacher is motivated purely by transferring knowledge from a vase to a pot, or from one container to another container. So it's very, very important that we make the time to make it. If we make the time to make it, and we have the time to make it, but once we make it, we fall asleep, then what's the point of all the effort that we have made before teachings to come to teachings? We didn't make all the effort to come to teachings to have a good nap. So what's very important is alertness. Is alertness, okay? And every hour, Jenny, you remind me, We'll take a short break. We'll stand up and stretch like that. We should do that, all right? Today we're going to talk about, today and tomorrow, and this will be compiled into a book, and my motivation is that it will benefit many Dharma centers around the world. It will benefit many beings around the world and many people who go to Dharma centers. That's my sincere wish. Thinking like this immediately, I thought I would like to give this kind of talk. And I'll be touching on subjects that are very touchy, maybe sensitive, and even to some perhaps offensive. And if that happens to people here in the audience who's listening to it through the videos in the future, I mean no offense. I mean no bias. It brings no benefit to anyone. All right? I have not seen this type of talk being talked or spoken of anywhere or published anywhere at all. And I've been haunting the Dharma shelves of all the major bookstores all over. Okay, so what I want to talk about is, it's divided into two parts. Our relationship with our guru in relation to the nine attitudes. So instead of going through 50 verses of thought transformation, 50 verses of guru devotion, which is very long, it's been condensed to the nine attitudes that we have with the guru. And what's a guru? I'm going to explain that. But I won't talk about that today. I will talk about that either tonight or tomorrow. What I want to talk about first is this. Dharma centers, their relationship with each other, their relationship with us, inside, outside. And these are the subjects that I'm going to go through with you. And if you guys can come up with more, I'm more than happy to talk about it. I'm going to go through it first. The phenomenon of Dharma centers mushrooming around the world, and why? What's their purpose? The committees in a Dharma center and the subcommittees. The volunteers who come to the Dharma center, their role. Number four, the actual Dharma center itself, the building. Number five, the difference between a Dharma center and a retreat center. Number six, unhappy students, new students, students. Number seven, how to promote the center in a non-political correct way. Number eight, sometimes we have high-profile people, wealthy people, or elite people come to the center. How should we treat them? What should they expect? How can we help? What should we do? Number 10, protocols, invitations, requesting teachings, how to request teachings, taking refuge, ceremonies, preliminary prayers to destroy obstacles. Okay? Number 11, other lamas, other centers. Why not? Okay, number 11. Number 12, when the Lama is giving private interviews, protocol, procedures, where, what should be done. Number 13, members of one center going to another center. The politics, the pros and cons, whys and why nots. Number 14, giving one who belongs to one center and one center giving support or help to another center. Why or why not? Number 15, center bashing. Number 16, people who come from other centers to one center. Number 17, educating our members, our committee members, and people in positions of doing work regarding our lama, regarding our lineage, regarding our goals, regarding where we come from, to know that very well, so that we never tell another person, I don't know. Especially if we are a committee, subcommittee, or especially if we are a volunteer or we're a staff, to people coming to the center or any of its outlets or branches, and they ask basic preliminary questions. Example, where does your lama come from? What incarnation? I don't know. Then who are you working for? All right? Number 18, how to handle students that experience mysterious phenomenon. Some students get black magic. It's real. Some students are not well, mentally not well. There are people like that. How to handle these people, what to do for them. Number 19, people who turn against the centers. People who feel unhappy about the centers. How to handle them, how to advise them, what to do. Number 20, sectarianism. Is following one's own lineage and center loyally sectarianism? How to avoid sectarianism, bias. Number 21, a center that's related to a mother monastery and a center that's not, the difference. Okay? Number 22, communication, transparency, and notice boards, and effective advertisement or knowledge to be disseminated within the members so everybody knows what is going on. Everybody knows. And in the center, there are some people who do emails, read internet, some people don't. Some people who use SMS, some people don't. So how to get to people who don't use current technology for whatever good reasons they have to disseminate information. Okay, and the buddy system is very, very important, the buddy system. Okay, these are the 23 items that I'm going to go through, which will be compiled into a book. And I would advise the writers to kindly please put them under different chapters. So I'll leave it to you to name the chapters and what they contain, but I think it's pretty comprehensive. That's why I requested the committee members, staff, volunteers, and subcommittee members, and liaisons all to be present, because this teaching is very, very important. It would erase a lot of questions. So always not attending teachings, always not attending talks, always having an excuse. Once we get into the habit, we always have an excuse. Then we always don't know. We don't know, we're not very compassionate because we make other people repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat. We make our teachers repeat, repeat, repeat. And we want private audience to take our teachers' private time or other students' private audience, private time to repeat, repeat because we didn't want to make an effort. So that's not very good. So if we're serious about our Dharma Center, which means we're serious about our Dharma practice, then it's very important. Right now, no one will be able to go and practice on their own and achieve attainments right now in this room. And I'll tell you why. Which of us knows the correct paths? Which of us know the correct practices, have the correct empowerments and directions to do this? So it's very, very important, all right? And then the next, either tonight or tomorrow, depends on how it goes, I'm going to talk about guru relations, center relations, all right? For example, I'll just run through a little bit. Frequently asked questions. Protocols of lamas from the lama side and to the lama. What does guru devotion actually mean? What does submission and surrender actually mean? Advising people who turn against their guru. I read that in a Dharma book just today, yesterday. And I saw it many times in Dharma centers in America. How to advise and how to help them. And qualities of a Dharma student. What's required of a Dharma student? And how to promote your center or your guru, not at the cost of another guru, not at the cost of another center. You see, you don't run around promoting your guru at the cost of, you don't run around promoting your guru at the cost of another guru. No, that's not Dharma, that's pure backbiting. Okay, that's business. Dealing with uptight other Buddhists and non-Buddhists who are very uptight. We are the way and you are not. How to deal with them? Because we come across them all the time. Students who criticize the lineage, the practice, the guru, and influence other students to do likewise. Subtly, directly, indirectly, how to deal with them. Lama bashing. That would be very interesting. I just can't wait to talk about that. Lama bashing. Mm-hmm. Disrobements. What's disrobing? What constitutes disrobing? Who can say who's disrobed and not disrobed? We'll talk about it. Committee members and responsibilities to the Lama and so forth, back and forth. People who come to the center and they're not at the center to learn spiritual practice, but they're there to gain monetary gains. They're there to look for business. They're there because they're lonely to look for friends, or they're there to simply go to the center and use the center, the people, and who's there for their own personal gains and benefits. And they stay for a little while, then they bash the lama, they bash the center, they go away, but they keep in contact with the center members. And they still remain friends. They're not friends with the lama, they're not friends with the center, but they're friends with the members of the center. So we're going to talk about that and how to deal with that, because we have that phenomenon all over the world. All right? We're going to deal with that compassionately. These are some of the things we're going to talk about in relation to guru relations. So this will be in one book. I don't know what to title it yet because it's too vast. I was thinking, why should I not bash the guru and center? Something fun. I mean, something that captivates. Something that Pauline will walk by the, you know, shelves in MPH. We're going to be in MPH. I'm controlling the ego now, so are you. Something that Pauline will walk by MPH and go, oh, how to become a better person. Oh, one way to Buddhahood. Our lineage is the best, boring. Let me see. Oh, awareness, whatever. And then she goes, wait, why I shouldn't bash a lama and center? Hmm. It's So we put interesting pictures in there. We can have pictures of JP punching Rinpoche. I mean, not really, but in action, you know. We have pictures of Madam grabbing a purse, walking out. I mean, very interesting things that are capture people on our advertisement. Yeah, we have pictures of Chia during the Dharma talk. Very interesting. It'll be very, very nice. Yes, we have pictures of Juan. We have just our SMS phone, and we have everybody there except Lamas. Delete. So Rinpoche, and she's pressing delete. And it'll be very, very interesting. We'll have pictures of Wendy doing a Dharma talk. It's over, and she's crying. Oh, thank God, I'm so tired. That's right. So we'll put a little, you know, the thought thing, you know, thank God the Dharma talk is over. And she'll be like, I'm so happy. That's right. We'll have all types of interesting things. Interesting things. And then we'll have Justin. We'll just take a picture of his hair and say, I attended Rinpoche's Dharma talk. It's self-explanatory. Very simple. And then we'll have another picture of everybody wearing white. Bill was here. That's right. All types of interesting scenarios. That's right, that's right, that's right. Then we'll have another picture of Ben on the computer. Shall I finish the work I've been assigned? Or should I go to a Dharma talk? Which one is guru devotion? Either way, I'm dead. Oh, yes, very interesting. And we have another one. We just have a coffin with Andy talking above it. And we'll put rest in peace. He attended Andy's Dharma talk. And we'll have the guru floating going. It'll be very, very interesting. Student, and we'll have a chapter, students who murdered the Rinpoche. And then we'll have Millie on the cover. Because she talked to him to death. Accident-prone students who kill Rinpoche by accident. We'll have David on the cover. Dressing appropriately for Dharma sessions. We'll have Angel on the cover in one of her red light dresses, where she looks like a Chinese Barbie doll. Wouldn't that be great? That's right. Did you see the new on yesterday? Kelantang, the way you dress, not allowed. Sexy dressing not allowed. And Star yesterday I saw. I mean, how do you decide what's sexy and not? Some women just wear a plastic bag, they look sexy in Kannada. Oh, whatever, I better not say too much. Then we have Suzanne Ng. We'll just have her on the cover like this, you know. And then we'll put the captions. Fly to Dubai or stay in Malaysia and study Dharma. Oh, it'd be so interesting. Yes. Then we'll have a picture of Shin on the cover holding her shin. She just got kicked by Rinpoche for being late. Wouldn't that be great? And Joseph? Insanities, crazy people, handicapped, all are welcome. And then we'll have Joy on the cover, bad haircuts. Are welcome too. I'm just kidding, Joy. Actually, bad hair because we have a few people here. But I won't look at anybody because you're going to be angry at me and then it'll be llama bashing time. And then always talk on a cell phone when Rinpoche's walking by. Well, you know who to put that on the cover. Margaret's looking at Madam. It's Yula! I'm walking by, she's like, hello? Everybody's holding incense, like, oh, money pimo, money pimo, ming me tsewe. She's like, hello? No, I'm not free tonight to meet up and practice tantra. Fabulous. Never do anything funny in front of Rinpoche because I'm like a computer, I never forget. It's just, I don't know. It's a practice for many lifetimes. I never forget. And then we'll have another picture. We'll have another picture on the front cover. People who didn't get any attainments, but they still strive on. We'll have a picture of Jivan trying to grow hair. Oh, money, demo, money, demo, money, demo, money, demo. Pauline, that's evil. Jivan didn't come here to be enlightened. He wanted to grow hair, but he discovered it's to be a Buddha. So he's like, oh, money, demo, money, demo, money, demo, money, demo. Oh, money, demo, money, demo, money, demo, money, demo. He's in front of a mirror. Oh, money, demo, money, demo, money, demo, money, demo, money, demo, money, demo. But he said, okay, never mind, I'll continue. I will not give up. You can have hair in your next life. We'll plant the seeds.
Yes.
And people doing Dharma talks actually are moved by the Dharma talk. And they're touched. And they want to practice. And they love it. And their faith grows. But outwardly, they don't look like that. We'll have a picture of Mrs. Mao. It will write, previous life, 10 lifetime school teacher. Wouldn't that be nice? She's actually quite soft and quite nice. And she does her practice. She's doing her prostration practice. But outwardly, look at her. She's like, tell me something I don't know. She always has this look. Tell me something I don't know. Oh, I like to. Husbands that look like they're in charge and they can go to Dharma teachings without their wife's permission, but actually it's not the case. Mr. Mao. So he has this smile. He's like, he's not allowed to because his guru, Mrs. Mao, said, you can. Okay, now I can. Interesting. We have a very interesting... We will go until 6:30 is it? 6 o'clock, and then we stop at 9:30, so you guys can go eat or take a nap or whatever, all right? And then we'll do it tomorrow also. And the reason is because some of our writers are going abroad, and Sharon and Susan are going abroad. It's been planned a year ago, and they've been very kind because the teachings that I'm giving today and tomorrow, they will take with them to Canada, and on their holiday there with their parents, they will also transcribe the whole thing. So they're going to plan to get this out within a month, you know, give or take a few days. Production and designs and book and printing and proofreading, they're all going to do that. Because the KMP department, now more and more people are joining, and it's becoming very professional. So we want to get out timelines. And plus, with Joseph pursuing MPH, then they've given some contracts. I'm not sure which one yet. I didn't read through it carefully. And so we are pressured to get some more books out on the shelves. There are a lot of teachings out already, but they need transcription or transcribing and proofreading and clarity and designing and putting them together. And most important is, not most important, but also important is sponsorship of the books. Sponsorship of printing 2,000 books, you know, 15,000, 2,000 books, 3,000 books, 4,000 books, and sometimes they cost between $10,000 to $20,000 per title. So sponsorship of the books is a very big setback sometimes. And along with work and transcriptions, you have to understand, once I give the teachings, they're down, then someone's recording them. You know, Sing Piao's recording them, and he spends days editing them and getting them clear and getting them on high quality and ensuring that everything's fine. Then he spends days burning them onto DVDs. You don't understand what KMP does, burning them along with his other duties. And it just burns and burns and burns. And then in the past, a few of our people got together who designed the covers. And getting the people to come and design the covers is a monumental task because they have their own work and whatever. And Dharma doesn't pay well. So then getting out the covers and putting the DVDs in and getting distributed is another monumental task. So that's just a DVD section. And everybody's like, gimme, 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 when. And I don't like the attitude of you're you, where I'm me, when do you give it to me? We're all one. And then once the DVDs are out, getting people to transcribe them on time and to push them and getting people who don't need to be pushed is a major miracle. And then once they're done proofreading, some people, when you proofread their work, they get offended. They feel that you don't trust what they've written. It's not what you trust. If you're human errors are there. So sometimes they're unhappy if you have someone proofread their work. But once it's printed out, it's not correct, then everybody's in trouble and they look even more dumb, right? And then after proofreading, it's going to the printers and striking a deal with the printers and working with the printers. It's monumental. And then getting the sponsorship. Actually getting the sponsorship out to sponsor a book. And then once the book is sponsored, then we have to talk to the bookstores. And we're little fishes in the ocean, very small fishes. So they barely look at us. They barely even talk to us. And, you know, we need connections. We need people who know people. We need people who know people who know people to get us into the bookstores. Why? What we have to stay in our Dharma books is very helpful Very nice. There's nothing political in it. There's nothing damaging. There's nothing bias. There's no fear about our books there. So we need people who know people. And getting people to know people is another monumental task. And then once we know these people, so-called, in the bookstores or whatnot, then negotiating with them. We had no skills in negotiating. We've never done this. Negotiating with them. Contracts. And in the past, some of the negotiations that we have done, we have been cheated out of a lot of money. Why? Because we don't know how to negotiate. We don't know how. You say, oh, how can people cheat a Dharma center? How can people cheat a guru? It happens all over the world. I read it all the time to gurus. All the time. It's not the gurus who's protected. It's the people who need to protect the guru or the institution. So there are times in the past that our institution has been cheated by people. And therefore, the cycle goes on and on. So it's very, very hard to get a book out. Very, very hard. It's a lot of work. So people are always asking, what can I do? What can I do? Well, what I just mentioned just now, the help we need, what can you do? What can anyone do towards that direction, to contribute toward that direction? And it's very, very important. So it's a lot of challenge. It's a lot of work. And I'm in a rush because time is short. Time is ticking. So therefore, all this has been handled by Joseph. No offense to him, he's never worked a day in his life. He's never earned a paycheck in his life. So he doesn't know about schedules and timelines and all these kind of things. He wants to, and he's learning. That's not his fault. He's learning, and he's getting better and better. There's one guy handling everything, SMSing. You know, you have some transcribers who send not nice SMSs. They're not happy about this. They're not happy about that. So Joe's got to do his typical Taiwan diplomat thing to make them happy. And you know, how many times can you be Taiwan diplomatic to them? Once in a while, you like to be undiplomatic. You know, you can give them a kite, you know. And then you get all kinds of people that feel like they're doing you a favor. But actually, they're not doing you a favor. They're doing themselves a favor by promoting the Dharma. They're doing themselves a favor. When they can transcribe, they can write, they can make connections, they can talk, they can open up shops, they can help maintain the outlets, whatever. Whatever. They're not doing Kichara House a favor. They're not doing Gandin a favor. If you help Kichara House or Kichara Media Publications or KH and you think you're doing a favor, then when you make offerings to the Buddhas, you're doing the Buddhas a favor. You're giving them beautiful flowers and water, so you're doing them a favor. What? When you clean their altars, you're doing the Buddhas a favor because you're cleaning their altar. So when you offer brocades and silks on them, you're doing them a favor. When you paint their faces, you're doing them a favor. So they look good for the public, yeah? I don't think so. Illogical. So when you help a Dharma center, you're not doing the Dharma center a favor. The Dharma center is doing you a favor because it provides a place for you, a field of merit for you to collect merit. It is a field of merit. It's a merit field for you. And there are so many directions opening up. People always ask, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do either for you because I don't know what you can do. But you look at your own skills. This is for every Dharma center. You look at your own skills and say, what am I good at? What am I good at? What I'm good at, I'm going to contribute to the Dharma Center. That's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to contribute continuously and again and again. And some of us, with respect, is not good at anything. Learn something. You can't go through life not knowing anything, not being good at anything. So learn. And the Dharma Center is a wonderful place to learn. I'll tell you why. In a Dharma Center, people find you have nasty and ugly and the really scary people. I find that you have the nicest people in the Dharma Center, and I'll tell you why. Because everybody's here because they choose to be here, and it's by volunteer. So if they take time away from their work, from their family, from their friends, from their job, or whatever they're doing, and they want to be here, that tells you something about those people. So since they want to be here, I think they're very nice people. So if we know how to engage these people, if we know how to tap into their talents and resources and brain power and their time, they will definitely help. It's just the secret is tapping. Example, last night I gave a talk in Bandung Utama. Many, many qualified people showed up. Many, many big wigs showed up. A few big wigs showed up. A few big people showed up. What did our center do? How were we organized? How do we tap into them? How do we get their contacts? How do we keep in contact with them? Or we just sat there doing Dharma talk. And then we go home as usual. So the Lama definitely can attract a lot of people. Without promoting the Lama can attract so many people. Imagine if you promote the Lama, how many people the Lama can attract. You saw all those sincere people yesterday. A lot of them are foreigners. You saw the Dattos who came? You saw those people who came. So how was our center organized to get their numbers, to talk to them, pass cards? If they come, where are they directed to? Who keeps a buddy system with them and keeps them in contact? You see, it isn't just they come, they see the Lama, they're impressed. They may be impressed with the Lama, they may be impressed with the center and the statues, but how long does that impression go if no one maintains them? So that we all walk in, and our job is set up the altar, set up the offering, set up everything, which is beautiful. It was done well. And then we just disappear. And then we come back here and we lament and complain. We don't have enough people, we don't have enough resources, we don't have enough help. We're getting help all the time. There are help and people all around us who come right to our doorstep. But how do we tap into them? What committee have we formed? We're always talking about money, 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 money. We're always talking about getting money, getting money, getting money. Money will come. Money will come. What will we do with the money? How will we utilize it? Do you think this is the end of the game where we just have a beautiful center, we have a lajang, and we are comfortable with ourselves? What happens if a new person comes in? Who talks to the new person? Who takes care of the new person? Who engages them? What happens if a dato datin comes? A dato and datin walks up. No offense to anybody, they have an air about them, they feel they're something, and they have achieved something, they have a status, they have an age, they don't want some chicken coming up to them and say, bok, 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 I'll teach you this, bok, 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 bok. They're out of here. So how do we take care of them? We're always lamenting how, where, who, what, who. We always meet people with connections, we always meet people who have connections, we always meet people. What do? We just show up in the teachings, clean up, and dedicate, and disappear. And we meet these people and the opportunities go again and again and again and again and again. Why? We have reached this level of what's the next step? We have a center, it's paid for. We have sponsorship, we can pay our bills. We're expanding. But how? Slowly, because we're not organized. Quickly, if we are. Why do we expand? So we can benefit other people. So when we come to the Dharma talk yesterday, like I said, I observed. Do you want Rinpoche to take down all their numbers, pass out his business cards? Hi, I'm Tim Rinpoche, call, blah, blah, blah. Hi, and take their cards. What's your card? And all the students stand there. I don't think so. So who was doing that? Everybody's sitting there like, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do. That's something. Everybody can talk to people. Everybody's dressed up. Everybody got their hair done. They got their chest hair plucked out, and they're already to go there, what? So you're already there. So what do? We let all this opportunity pass? You got to think. Got to think. More people of all kinds of backgrounds and all types of statures will come in the future. How fast they come will depend on us. And I'm going to be a little mystical on you. They're all waiting to come. I can attract them. I know who I am and I know what I can do. I can attract them. Don't doubt that. But can you maintain them? That's why I don't attract. That's why I don't send out the message and I don't advertise, because I don't want to attract these people, because with these people, you have one time only. You don't talk well, you don't maintain, they're gone. And they're gone without knowing anything. They may even badmouth you and say, oh, you know, I went there, they're not organized, they're like this, they're like that, and they go off. Why? Because we didn't maintain them. That's why I don't have a policy of attracting people, I don't call people, I don't have open interviews, I don't openly do divinations for people easily. Why? I don't want to attract. Why don't I want to attract? Why attract people to a place that's not ready? The outside looks nice, the inside's not. So what am I talking about? The liaisons, the committee, the subcommittees. Volunteers must organize and mobilize now to stop thinking about raising money alone and just money, 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 and to mobilize and think, how can we do this? How can we do that? I can't do this. I can't do that. And then in meetings, not agree, because why? When you do certain projects, you get $1,000 or $2,000, you feel disheartened. But outside, you pretend, oh, we did such a good job. We tried our best. We earned this, and we're collecting merits. Please, deep down inside, when you know we have a loan of $400,000 or $500,000, and then you do some work that only earns $3,000, some charity thing you do one week and you earn $3,000. Deep inside, you're like, $497,000 to go. Who won't think bad? Let's be honest. Let's quit faking it. Some of us don't have the capacity to earn more than $2,000 or $3,000. That's okay. But let's think how. Let's think how we can. How? There are people out there who can help us earn $400,000 or $500,000 if that's what you want. There are. So instead of trying to directly tap into $400,000 or $500,000, why don't we indirectly tap into it? Make friends with people who have $400,000 or $500,000. Make friends with friends of people with $400,000 or $500,000. Make friends of friends of friends of friends of people. That's how all sponsorship comes. I'm sorry to say this. I'm not saying this for myself. I'm saying this for all Dharma centers around the world. So instead of having little meetings and squabbles and blah, 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 and then you spend hours and days and planning, and then after a weekend of whatever, you get $3,000. Oh, didn't we do a great job? We got 55 million to go. Oh, I'm so happy. At this rate, I think we'll pay off our loan 10, 15 lifetimes from now. Isn't that great? And everybody inside is thinking, why? Why can't we do more? Well, I'm giving you a secret, right? You shouldn't stop doing those little fundraisings that earn 2,000, 3,000. Why? You learn the ropes. You collect the merit. And you gain experience. And by doing those little fundraisers, you earn the respect of everybody who look at you, and you work very hard consistently. And people will contribute. See, people won't contribute to a bunch of sloats or people laying around doing nothing. People will contribute to people who are doing everything and sweating. If you see a soup kitchen, they're working very hard, you want to go and give a donation. If you see someone sitting around picking their nose and say, I want to help the world, please, I want to help the world. I visualize ladybugs come and bless the world, and I want to help the world. But if you see someone working in a soup kitchen, working their butt off, they're sweating, and their hair is oily, you want to make it, how can I make it there? Go away. How can I make, go away. Well, how can I make a donation? Go away. They'll come back the next day and say, how can I, they'll force a donation on you. I've seen that happen. I did that in Mother Teresa's place. I went to Mother Teresa's place to make a donation in Bombay. I went. They weren't interested at all. But I forced a donation on them. I gave them 500 rupees. That time was a huge amount for me. That's about 40 ringgits. Huge amount. I forced it on them because I left there crying. I couldn't stop crying. The minute I walked in, I cried. The minute I left, I cried. I cried from seeing the nuns and their sincerity. I cried from the place. I cried from the people that lived there. I cried from the whole thing. I cried because Mother Teresa's energy pervaded the whole place. I couldn't stop crying. I felt like an idiot. I was in robes crying. I just told them I have a crying disease. Sorry. Yeah, I felt like an idiot. But it's okay, because I was so moved. But these people worked their butt off, and I wanted to donate. Even when I didn't have money, I took what I have, I gave it to them. And that's the feeling they give. When people see us, they say, why donate to these clowns? They don't even say hello to me. So what we need to mobilize now is, yes, we have Sunday classes, and 5 people attend, thank you very much. That doesn't support our center's activities. You always think, the Sunday classes are boring. The people teaching are boring. The class is boring. The people are boring. I'm bored. I'm not going to go there. Well, if you have that attitude, it will extend to all activities in the center. Make it not boring. Make suggestions. Go there and participate. And make the class lively and fun and happy and happening. Make it happen. If you always say it's them and me, I don't like it and they like it and they do that way and I don't like it, then you're not part of the center. If you're not part of the center, how can you do anything? You think center membership is just signing up a form and paying your money for the year? No, that's not. It's much more than that. It's much more than that. So you have to think. Make it happen. Make it lively. Make it fun. And Mixama's attendance has gone bigger. I'm so glad. There's only 4 million or something like that to go. Finish it. That's a puja that all of our center need to do. We have time for Mixama at Coffee Bean. We have time for Mixama at Starbucks. We have time for Mixama with our friends and gossip and chatter and idle chatter and teach them Dharma and teach them. They teach us this and we share this, we share that. Share my foot. Waste time. Finish the pujas. Finish. Finish the Mixamas. So you don't want to stay till 7 a.m. and look at crystal eye bags get bigger. Stay until 3 a.m. Stay until 12 a.m. Contribute. A little bit is better than nothing. Make yourself. Don't keep making other priorities bigger. Because what are you actually doing in Dharma practice? What are you actually doing in your Dharma practice? What? What are you actually doing? Are you meditating every day? Are you in retreat? Are you studying up? What are you doing? You have to think. And don't wait for your lama or someone else to push you. You should push. Stop waiting to be inspired. You inspire. You inspire others. It's very important. You need to inspire others. When other people let you down, when people disappoint you, you should think, ah, yeah, I give up now because they disappointed me. How selfish. That comes from the selfish mind. Why? Because you're still waiting to be taken along. You're still not taking responsibility. People who say they feel disappointed, they don't want to attend, they feel disappointed, they don't want to do, they feel disappointed that they can't do this, they can't do that because other people disappoint them. Actually, it's a very straightforward, selfish remark. I'll tell you why. Because you're still waiting for people to do something for you. You need to inspire. When other people say, I feel disappointed, you need to know how to make them not feel disappointed. In life, everybody feels disappointed about something, so we need to learn how to overcome disappointment and become a beacon for others. If we become a beacon for others, it is a practice toward selflessness. If we feel disappointed and give up, it's a practice of selfishness and making the habit of selfishness even stronger. Why? We're still waiting for people to make us happy. Wrong view. Maybe we didn't know this before this, but it's wrong view. If all the gurus and masters and all the obstacles they go through, they just give up, then how? If our parents saw all the problems we made when we were growing up and just gave up on us, how? How? And some of us have tremendous problems. And we just gave up, how? So, waiting to be inspired is very selfish. Let that be a quote. Waiting to be inspired is very selfish. And it makes our selfish mind become stronger. Why? Of course, we're still waiting for other people to do things for us. That's why. We need to inspire. And if we can't inspire, at least let's not bring other people's inspiration down by saying things that doesn't inspire other people. And with time and patience and work and experience, we will inspire ourselves. We will inspire others. Overnight, we cannot. Overnight, we cannot. Definitely not. These days, people tell me all the time I inspire them. I'm kind of surprised. Because I never thought I can inspire people. But these days, people email me and SMS me, tell me all the time, I inspire them. I'm like, oh, wow. So I'm happy. You know why I'm happy? I'll tell you why. That means my selfish mind has become less. Sincerely. My selfish mind has become much, much less. If I'm able to inspire, that means I've done more. I've taken away from more of my personal attractions and attachments for others. So therefore, I inspire. How can you inspire when you do something different than others? If you're selfish, you think about yourself, you don't think about anybody else, of course you can't inspire, that's normal one. Why would you be normal and inspire other people? If you're abnormal and inspire other people, that's better. What's abnormal? A good way. You work more. You work harder. You get an experience. Look, we're all here for a reason. We're all in this room for a reason. We're here together. Stop thinking of the differences. Think of the similarities, as I mentioned last night. Think of the similarities. We all want spiritual attainments. Everybody in this room, everybody without a doubt, would love it if we benefit the city, we benefit this country, and VIA this country, the world, and we make a difference in people's lives. All of us will be tremendously happy. Instead of just talking and dedicating, let's do it. How do we do it? One step at a time. One step at a time. Some of us in the beginning now must take two or three jobs. Some of us must take two or three jobs. And some of us will do one or two jobs. And in the future, as it grows, those people with two or three jobs will maybe be lessened to one or two jobs because other people can handle it. But in the beginning, we need to work a little harder. Instead of pushing it to the other person, pushing and pushing and pushing, it might fall. If it falls, then there's nothing to push anymore. Or you can stay home and take bubble baths for the rest of our life. We might drown. So think. And now, the phenomenon of Dharma centers. All these things I say, let me make it clear to people. If it matches you, it's because the teachings are supposed to make us aware of some of the things we're doing that can be harmful. The teachings help us to open our eyes to something we're doing that's harmful. So if we hear some teachings that we might feel it's about us and we feel uncomfortable, let me mention again, Rinpoche remembers, I remember what everybody does, I don't target. Why don't I target? What's the benefit? What's the benefit? If I want to tell you, I'll tell you directly, you know me. I'm like an arrow, I just tell you directly. I don't target. I tell you as according to the teachings, as according to what I've learned and read. And therefore, if it matches you and it makes you uncomfortable, you should think, oh, I'm so glad someone told me this. And I'm glad I know. I can do something about it. Why are you uncomfortable? Because you know there's something wrong. Very simple. It's a human emotion. So take it positively, not negatively. In traditional Buddhist countries, or traditional countries where Buddhism is quite, has a stronghold, it is supported by the government. It is supported by a bastion of wealthy people or business people. Why? Because the consciousness of supporting the Dharma is there. In countries like Malaysia, where the government is not Buddhist, which is fine, but they allow Buddhism to grow. It's like in a Buddhist country where the government supports Buddhism, but they don't really support other religions. That's the same thing in other countries where Buddhism is not prevalent and they have their religions, they support their own religions. It's the same thing. What? There's nothing unfair about it at all. And there are countries like America where Christian consciousness is very strong due to their beginnings. So when you talk about Christian this, Christian that, Christian this, Christian, people donate very easily because it's in their mass consciousness already. Where countries like Thailand, if you talk about Buddhism, it's in their mass consciousness, so people donate easily without thinking. Buddhism, okay. And in beautiful countries like Malaysia, where Islam is in the mass consciousness, when you talk about something for Islam to donate, people donate. It's fair and it's evil, equal and square everywhere. There's nothing wrong or right. It's the same. So like that, we are fortunate to live in an Islamic country where the government is truly Islamic because they give us total freedom and we can do as we like. All we do is follow the law. How fortunate is that? Very fortunate. So we don't need to look at Malaysia as an Islamic or non-Islamic country. We look at Malaysia as a beautiful country. That's why I call it beautiful. We have the freedom to do what we want. That's why I always say it's beautiful. It's not just a geographical beauty. We can practice Dharma here. To me, there's no home except a place where I can practice the Dharma. There's no home anymore. I've given up attachment to home and place. Why? What is home? A place where I can lounge and kick back and do nothing and become more selfish and more into myself and more into doing nothing, that's a home. Or a place where I can actually expand. That's home. Because home is a place where you can find home yourself. That's a home. So, in these non-traditional countries, such as in England, where they try to build mosques, they have to prevail on the local Islamic community, the Muslim community, to build a mosque. They can't appeal to everybody there because the consciousness is not there. There's nothing wrong. And they built it and it's beautiful. So for example, here, where the consciousness is not there, it's not Tibet or something. To build a temple is very hard because you have to explain from A to Z on the benefits. And it's very, very hard. So therefore, in countries like this, how do we start when we don't have mass consciousness? In countries like America, whatever, you know, whatever, when there's no mass consciousness of Dharma, how do we build a temple? How do we build support monks? How do we build Dharma activities? How? When a place doesn't have consciousness of it. And hence, because a place doesn't have the support of the mass consciousness of the people to do it, it's not bad or good, it is just a statement, then you need Dharma centers. Why are they called Dharma centers? Because they're not full-fledged temples. They're not full-fledged churches or synagogues, whatever. They are centers. Centers where people can gather together to a center to learn, to study, to practice, to meditate. And hence, in countries where mass consciousness of Buddhism is not there, which is fine, we need centers. And centers start out very difficult. They start out in teeny little shop lots. They start out in teeny little houses, rented. You can't do much. And the place cannot be built according to specification or traditionally or in a way that's conducive for the meditation or conducive for the practitioners. It's got to be built in a way that's according to the house, meaning you have to accommodate the house. The house doesn't accommodate you. Isn't that ridiculous? Whereas traditionally, when you build a temple, you build it according to specific measurements. Measurements and specifications and setup. I mean, if we were to build the Ladang, we definitely would not build it like this, with all these sharp corners and all these kind of funny grooves and the stairs here and people coming in when the Lama's teaching in, out. No, you wouldn't do that. It's interruptive. It's not practical. But we can't do that. Why? We don't have mass conscience say, hey, we're building a temple and people just throw the money at you. No. So we have to work on the next level, Dharma centers. And Dharma centers struggle a lot because they're not dealing with mass consciousness. So getting people to sponsor a place, getting sponsorship together, Dharma centers struggle tremendously. 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 I know I did. I know I struggled for the last 14, 15 years tremendously. And you know what's the worst place for a Dharma center? The worst place for a Dharma event is rented places. Rented. Why? You can't do what you want. You're restricted. And then you have the neighbors. So you can't do what you want inside because you can only decorate it up or do it up as the house requires. And then when you leave, you have to put it back the way it was. So it's very restricted. It's very uncomfortable. That's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of suffering. Why? You put all this money and energy into a place, you can't even keep it, it can't continue. There's no continuity. And then parking is a big issue. If you have in a commercial area, parking is a nightmare. Crime sometimes is dangerous. You know, you wouldn't want one of your Dharma students going Dharma course and on the way there, they get their purse snatched. It's happened. Or on the way out, they get their purse snatched, or they get their purse snatched once every few months. And then when you're in residential areas, you have the law to contend with. You have rules to contend with. And you have parking to contend with. Some of our students are parked outside. When they go out, when they drive home, they have nails put into their tires because they parked in someone's space that they own the road. We didn't know they owned the road. Yeah. So in residential areas, there's a lot of suffering. A lot of suffering. And it's daily. It's all the time. And this is what Dharma centers have to put up with. But where can it start? Dharma centers turn into temples. Like Reverend Tsutsi's place, Reverend Chen Yang's place, started in a little house in the hills, in Taiwanese hills. And her and her few disciples, four or five people, meditated on Manjushri, I heard. And did their practices and prayers, and it grew to what it is now. So it starts, so this one can grow something big. I'm sure Galaxy and all that didn't start huge in Penang. I'm sure it was just a few monks starting out. And like Bright Hill Temple in Singapore, look how huge it is. It's huge. But how did it start out? The great Reverend Hong Guan started out with a little shack, a little house, giving teachings and meeting people and being sincere. So all that can grow very big. Get all that. Let me tell you all something, a secret. Money is not difficult to get. It's your approach. It's your attitude and perspective. It's not hard to get. Coming from my background, if I tell you that, believe me. I come from poverty-stricken background. Okay? Then, so we need Dharma centers. And Dharma centers are mushrooming all over the world in hundreds. Some lamas have hundreds of Dharma centers, hundreds. Some lamas have 500 Dharma centers in the world. 500, one lama. Do you think the lama ran around opening them? No, their students are very hardworking. Their students are very organized. And their students know how to organize. I don't think one lama can run to 500 Dharma centers. Impossible. I can barely go to one. Impossible. But their students are very organized. Why is it some centers barely can open one and keep one open, and some can open 500 and still opening? 500 plus and still opening. Why? Organization. So Dharma centers phenomena is going to continue. Why is it going to continue? Because why? Dharma is growing. And it's increasing. Why is it increasing? Because it benefits society. It benefits any society, any group, any country. It benefits. Why? It makes people harmonious. The first thing Dharma does is bring people together. The next thing Dharma does is bring couples and friends and close people more harmonious together. You'll see that effect on you and your families when you enter Dharma more. That's immediate. I don't teach people to separate from Dharma. No way. I don't teach that. If they ask me a question, I will tell them straight out. But I do not recommend. Very simple. So, of course, that benefits. It makes cohesion. And therefore, Dharma centers will grow. And as Dharma centers grow, the reason why Dharma centers grow is because there is no mass consciousness to support any bigger centers at the time. So it's always from personal donations. So this phenomenon, Dharma centers growing, will become bigger and bigger and more and more and grow more and more and more. Till in the future, a mass consciousness grows and becomes bigger, and there'll be bigger support where it turns into bigger places, organized. So each Dharma center basically runs on its own rules all around the world. unless it belongs to a large organization, so they make rules from the mother center. It will grow. So that's the phenomenon of Dharma centers. And in Dharma centers, you always need a committee. Why? Dharma centers sometimes can be fronts for wrong activities or wrong people or wrong covers for people. So therefore, the government of every country, especially like in Malaysia, is very protective of its citizens and very kind. So they have committee members who belong to the nation, who are citizens of the country, which is very logical. And they give them positions. They give them positions to cross and balance check each other to make sure that everybody involved is not engaged in dubious business or using the center as some kind of weird front that looks holy. Because why? If you say, I'm running a Dharma center, but in the back you're doing something else, no one's going to know because it looks very good in the front. So in the front, you're in robes. In the back, you're in your bikini jumping up and down. So the government is doing that. So we think, oh, what's committee? The committee is the government's way to love and protect its people. And that's what Malaysia does. And that's in every place in the world, to love and protect its citizens. We don't want a band of terrorist people here coming from KH. Can you imagine all of you as terrorists? I send you out. Just imagine that. Just imagine Koki. We squeeze him into a ninja outfit because we don't have a quadruple XL. We squeeze him into a ninja outfit. And we send him to Kyoto to blow up the Imperial Palace to make a statement. We don't even need to use any kind of gases. We just send him there and blow up the Imperial Palace to make what statement? We are powerful. And we'll know it's him because as he's blowing up the place, you know, throwing the dynamite sticks and all that stuff, his armpit rips. Oops. And then they catch him on the scene because he was out of breath. Halfway out of the Kyoto Imperial Palace, he was out of breath and he was panting. And they catch him. So we got discovered, but then he had his own little special pill. It's called Omani Pemehon Sinai. He goes in meditation, he takes on his next life. He got caught. Can you imagine?